Hello, planners, pantsers, plantsers, percolators, note takers, outliners, conjurers, and daydreamers. I'm Grant Faulkner, executive director of this rollicking writing event known as National Novel Writing Month, aka NaNoWriMo. And I'm here with my co-host, Brooke Warner of She Writes Press, to discuss the creative process that goes into writing a novel or memoir in November, or any time really. And Brooke, I want memoirists to know that they are welcome to write the first draft of their memoir in National Novel Writing Month, because I feel like memoirs and novels are siblings, or at least kissing cousins, which is a really weird phrase now that I think of it. But let's say that a memoir and a novel share a fundamental quality. A good novel and a good memoir are always good stories, which means they have interesting conflicts and story worlds, and their characters go on compelling journeys. One just happens to be fiction and the other nonfiction, but even those lines can blur. So Brooke, since you work with nonfiction authors and memoirists, why would you tell them to do NaNoWriMo?
Well, since I did it myself in 2018, I can say the reasons that it worked for me. And I was writing nonfiction. I was writing Write On Sisters, which is neither memoir nor novel. And first and foremost, it was about accountability. You know, I committed to this thing and by God, I was going to do it. And so every day that November took on a different kind of meaning. And I think this year, when we have COVID hanging around and so much tension in the country, and this election, you know, whose results I know we're not going to know in early November, I honestly can't think of anything better than to have something this meaningful and heartfelt and inspiring, you know, a program like this to be a part of that can take you away from the multiple train wrecks going on all around us. So that is a biggie. And then the second is community. You know, I loved posting about NaNoWriMo when I did it in 2018 and getting so much good feedback and encouragement from people on social media. So that was a huge deal. I didn't do any write-ins, but I was moved by knowing that all of these people were writing with me. So I think that this is kind of what I'm thinking, you know, just now with COVID, this idea of writing together. And there was one more thing that I want to mention, which is bragging rights. You know, I wrote 35,000 words, I think, in a month, which for me was enormous, a huge accomplishment. And I have been kind of happy to pull that out from time to time over the past couple of years, you know, just to hassle my students and stuff like that. So Grant, speaking of bragging rights, today's guest, Hugh Howey, is a legend in the world of self-publishing, and he is a NaNo alum five times over. So what's the story of his connection to National Novel Writing Month?
Yeah, I'm going to ask him that in more detail when he joins us. But I'm super excited to talk to Hugh because he's one of our really significant success stories. And his personal writing story is so interesting as well. When he first started doing NaNoWriMo, I think it was 10 or maybe a little bit longer ago, he was actually a bookstore clerk. And what I'm charmed by is that he volunteered at his local library and worked with some young writers there in those early days, which is really what NaNoWriMo, the NaNoWriMo spirit is all about, you know, taking part in the bigger writing community and helping others reach their creative goals. And for listeners who might not know the story of Hugh, he self-published an early NaNoWriMo novel, Wool, and it had blockbuster level success and really changed publishing because it was one of the first big indie book successes, or at least in terms of fiction book successes. And he's had a number of bestsellers since then. And in talking about the importance of NaNoWriMo to Hugh, I heard him once mention that he learned the importance of posting his progress to the world, which is interesting to me because another part of NaNoWriMo is about building in a system of accountability, as you mentioned, Brooke, and feeling comfortable sharing your writing or your writing challenges and your writing successes. This has all made me think about the first time I interviewed Hugh way back in 2013 and how he talked about self-confidence. We were talking about the indie publishing and all the nuts and bolts of it, like how to hire a cover designer, how to market your book, how to post on social media and stuff like that. But no matter what we were talking about, he kept mentioning, you know, you've got to have the self-confidence to do that. And he said that over and over again, not really consciously, like, so I didn't think he knew that he was mentioning that. But it made me think that he developed the self-confidence to believe in his story, not only to write it, but to publish it himself. And then he had the self-confidence to learn everything else. And it was a lesson for me to scrutinize my own level of self-confidence or my own lack of it in some cases and to try to build more of it. So I'm curious, Brooke, what do you think the role self-confidence plays in creativity and publishing and promotion too?
Yeah, I mean, it plays a role in all of that for sure. And another thing about Wool that is kind of a famous part of that story is that when he negotiated the contract rights with Simon & Schuster because they wanted to buy his self-published book and give him a ton of money because it was doing so well, he famously negotiated to keep the ebook rights, which made a huge splash at the time because I think it was pretty unprecedented. And I just wanted to share that part of the story because it's very interesting. And I think it must show something of his self-confidence that he knew the book was doing well and that he could make that deal. And it's interesting, you know, it's like, is that self-confidence? Is that being renegade or brash? I love this idea though of being confident enough to go for what you want and to ask or to demand the rights if you're in the position to do so. And he really was one of the earlier self-published authors to make this kind of huge splash. And so he's a big deal, and I'm excited to interview him today and just hear what he has to say. But this idea of promotion and publicity, you know, you hear a lot in the world of traditional publishing, like he had Simon & Schuster behind him, and that was a big deal for the distribution machine that a publisher like Simon & Schuster has. But when it came to the ebook rights, he was like, well, I'm an indie author and I can do this for myself. Thank you very much. So just something to think about. And then back to the writing part. Yeah, for sure. You have to develop self-confidence. I think it's a big one. But the other thing about self-confidence is that I think it has, you know, peaks and valleys. That sometimes you do feel confident and great and on top of the world. And then the very next day, you might just feel like you're in the lowest moment. And that in part, that's the roller coaster of being a lifelong writer.
It's definitely a roller coaster. And I think, once you've been writing for a while, it's also easy to forget that what's essentially a stepladder of self-confidence, I think. It takes a certain degree of confidence, for instance, just to sign up for NaNoWriMo and believe that you can write 50,000 words in a month. And then it takes confidence to believe in your story, to think that it's worth telling and that writing, it will be a gift to yourself. And then it takes confidence to tell others you're doing this or to take part in a writing event or even just to post in our forums. You know, every little piece of the writing experience requires some degree of self-confidence. So I hope anyone who is listening is thinking about moments when you're lacking confidence and need ways to buoy your belief in yourself. And I think one way to do that is to hear other people's stories. So I'm eager to go straight to Hugh to hear his approach to NaNoWriMo and his approach to confidence.
Yeah. And on that note, I hope everyone listening has the confidence to sign up for NaNoWriMo at NaNoWriMo.org. And I am confident that we will be right back after this short break.
Hey, Brooke, if you could be an expert in any topic, what would it be?
Let me think about that. Probably the art of wine pairing, how to cut kittens' claws, and maybe how to fix any problem gone wrong with my car.
Well, I'm sure you could find at least one of those topics on the Great Courses Plus. If you'd chosen something a little more learned, you could find anything you want to be an expert in, but I'll call the producer and mention the car fixing thing and see what we might do for you.
I appreciate that, Grant. And I do know that the Great Courses Plus has thousands of informative, engaging lectures that you can stream from the comfort of your own home.
Yeah, and I've been leaning on these during the pandemic because, you know, even though I have an occasional social distance coffee shop meetup or a walk around my neighborhood, I am decidedly homebound more than usual. And this is the time of year I'm in full novel writing immersion mode as a way to get ready to write. So I've been listening to this great course called Rise of the Novel, which goes through the entire history of the novel. It's really cool from the beginning of the novel until now. And so it's been nice learning a little bit about Don Quixote's rambling adventures while I'm cooped up in my unrambling adventure. How about you, Brooke? What's the last thing you watched or listened to?
Well, in line with my random aspirations for expertise, I watched part but not all of Capitalism versus Socialism, in part because I'm editing a book on this topic right now, and I've been blown away by how much there is to know about the tension between these two models of government and how that plays into the current political nightmare we're facing right now. However, this course has 24 sessions, and so I'm just making my way little by little. I have only watched three, but it's super relevant, very enlightening, as are all of the Great Courses Plus programs.
Yeah, we're happy that we're back to promoting the Great Courses Plus because it is truly great, and it gives you access to professors and experts from top universities and institutions around the world. And Brooke, you probably remember that you can download the Great Courses Plus app to learn on your own time on any device.
I do. And it's downloaded. Check. And here comes the call to action, which is the Great Courses Plus is offering our listeners an entire month trial of unlimited access for free.
Woohoo! And let me remind listeners and you that this special offer won't last long and Brooke might not sing the offer again. And I'm so glad I get to say these words again. We have a special URL, Brooke. So will you do the honors and feel free to sing? That was very nice.
You bet, Grant. thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded. Don't wait. thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded.
That's officially a jingle. Welcome back, everybody. And I am super excited to welcome today's guest, Hugh Howey, who is a 5-time NaNoWriMo participant who still can't believe he ever wrote a novel. But his works have become New York Times bestsellers, and they've been translated into over 40 languages, and they've sold millions of copies around the world. And 4 of his books are currently being adapted for film or television, including Wool, Sand, and Beacon 23. So I hope we see those soon. And all 3 of these were written in the month of November, which is huge. Congratulations, Hugh, and thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And Hugh, you know, I want to pick up on that NaNoWriMo thread. You have one of the more interesting NaNoWriMo stories, and I'm thinking about the year 2011 in particular. And I want to read what you wrote in a NaNoWriMo blog post to take you back to that time. You wrote, "Nobody has ever been so well prepared for National Novel Writing Month success as I was in 2011. It was my 3rd NaNoWriMo in a row. The previous 2 years had been wonderful successes. This time was going to be even better. I was actually going in with confidence and a game plan. For the first time ever, I'd actually outlined what I was going to write. I was chomping at the bit to get started, but then October happened." So I was wondering if you could tell us what happened that October and how it changed your plans.
Well, what a cliffhanger. I was working on the 4th in a series of books, young adults, space opera books. And having written the 3rd, I knew where the characters were going and what they were doing. And so I had a really established plan for what I was going to write for the first time. And then that October, a short story that I'd written the month before called Wool just started going viral. And my sales were like doubling every day. And I was watching this happen, you know, on my KDP dashboard at the time, and I'd never seen anything of mine sell like this. And I was used to like selling maybe 100 copies of a book in a month, and this was on pace to do over 1,000, and then 3,000 the next month. And everyone was asking for more in this story, except that, I know it's a bit of a spoiler for the first part of Wool, but most of the characters at the end of the story are dead. And so I had no characters to write with. I had nothing planned after that, the termination of that story. And yet here was the first time in my like very young writing career that I actually had demand and people asking for more of something. So I dropped what I'd planned for. And this happened October 31st that I was watching my sales tick over like 3,000 copies for the month. And I thought, or it might have been more than that. But anyway, laying in bed that night, I was like, I can't wake up tomorrow and start writing the 4th book in this trilogy that no one's discovered yet. I need to strike while the iron is hot. And so I went to sleep that night thinking about how I was going to turn this short story into a novel, and woke up the next morning as unprepared as you could possibly be for a National Novel Writing Month. And that month of writing really changed my life. It's the book that became my first New York Times bestseller and led to, you know, getting an agent and film deals and all kinds of other opportunities, quitting my day job, writing full time, eventually sailing around the world. That month and that Halloween Eve were not what I thought was going to happen that November. And boy, I'm glad it worked out the way it did.
It's fascinating, Hugh, because you talked about being so prepared and having outlined for the first time. And then I'm guessing you woke up, as you said, on November 1 and kind of scrapped that plan and went with something new. So I'm curious about how you are today. Now, are you a planner, or do you pants or plants, as many in the NaNoWriMo community say?
Yeah, I like the idea that it's a combo. I've never understood the distinction between plotting and pantsing, because when you write an outline, you're doing it by the seat of your pants. It's coming from nowhere. It's an ex nihilo act of creation. And when you're writing by the seat of your pants, you have to have some kind of outline in your mind just from all the stories that you've absorbed over the years. You know what a character arc looks like. You know what a hero's journey looks like. You know how the story's going to have a beginning, middle, and end. So there's always an outline, and you're always writing by the seat of your pants. It's just a question of which direction we lean more, that we consider one more than the other. But my favorite way of writing is to have lived with a story in my mind for months or years. And so I feel like I know the characters in the world before I sit down to write it. And that's what I've had for almost any book that I write. And that's what I had in the past. With Wool, I had dreamed about this world a little bit, but I did not have the bigger story. And what I really credit NaNoWriMo with doing is not giving me any excuse to just sit and toy with an outline or write character descriptions and any of that stuff. Like, you have to write your 1700 words a day. So while I was thinking about the story, I had to just start on that first page and move that blinking cursor. And that's what NaNoWriMo has done for me over the years, over and over again, is like forced me to get words on the paper.
Hugh, that's a great segue into my next question, because in the blog post that I earlier read from, you also wrote, "I can say with confidence that I wouldn't have written the same books if I'd written them any other way. The compressed nature of a nano novel makes for a tighter plot. It reinforces the importance of not taking a day off. NaNoWriMo isn't a writing exercise for me. It trained me to be a pro." So I was wondering if you can talk a little bit more about how NaNoWriMo trained you to be a pro, and then how it makes for a tighter plot, or how writing for quantity can actually lead to quality. I think some people don't exactly trust that.
It's really weird that we make that distinction between quality or quantity, when I've always found they go together. This isn't, you know, we're not talking writing nonfiction where you have to spend years researching, but I think even then you'd benefit from big writing sessions just to keep the prose tight. If you think about the books that you really love reading, you don't read them over a 2-year period. They're the ones that keep you up late at night and that you read for hours at a time, and you just blast through them. And, you know, I found that my skills as a writer rely heavily on my history as a reader. And that means that when I fall into a really good writing routine, I'm almost reading what I'm writing as I'm writing it. And the typos go way up because you don't stop and mess with any of that stuff. You just keep pouring ahead. And the same probably happens when you're, you know, really into a book and reading it. You probably misread some stuff and skip over some things. But that addiction to your story and that inability to set it aside and wanting to start first thing in the morning and write till late at night, that's a sign that you're in the middle of writing a good story. Just like those kind of reading signals are a sign that you're reading a great story. And I also find that when I have these monster sessions, you know, while there might be a few typos, there's a lot less editing to do, because the flow from one part to another stays the same. You're just in the same mindset. You're in the same, you know, chemical state, the same mentality as you're pouring all these words down. And when you start and stop and you're like, I'm just going to write a paragraph or write a sentence here, write a sentence there, it's been too long since you've read what has come before. And so I just find I can tell when I'm going back through my books, the parts that I'm reading that I had a really productive day are the parts that also read the best.
I love that term, monster sessions. I hope that people will adopt that for NaNoWriMo coming up, because it's awesome. It's kind of empowering. I also know that you were a bookstore clerk around the time you first started doing NaNoWriMo, and I'm intrigued by this because I'm sure you learned a really different side of the writing and publishing industry by doing that. So what did working in a bookstore teach you?
I would say the best education you can get to be a professional writer is to work in a bookstore at some point in your life. A small independent bookshop is the best, where you're going to have some of the duties of dealing with reps from publishers, with ordering, with returns, just to see what the life cycle of a book on a bookstore shelf really is. And also because it's not very long, you know, a brand new book might sit on the store shelf for 3 to 6 months. And if it doesn't become a bestseller, it's returned. And even if it becomes a bestseller, it might not be available anymore. there's very few classics that sit around for a long time. So your window of opportunity is very, very short with each book that you write. And I think one of the misnomers is that when you write a book, you have this product that's going to be available and selling and supporting you for the rest of your life. And it's just not the way it works, even for New York Times bestselling authors. The other thing that was startling for me was seeing the books that publishers had a lot of belief in, a lot of faith in, and put a lot of marketing dollars behind still didn't become bestsellers. And that dissuades you as a fledgling writer of the idea that the only thing holding you back is not having a big enough push behind you. Because when you see that something with $1 million marketing budget, and that's an extreme example, very few books get that kind of marketing, you know, maybe one every few years with a major publisher, but even those can flop. So you really learn to take the long view and to not kick yourself about your immediate success. And that was necessary for me to write my first book and then immediately start working on my next book, not think, how am I going to, you know, support myself with this one product? Keep writing, get better, get more stories out there on the market, because it was my seventh published work, Wool, that, you know, finally hit a tipping point and had some demand for more of my writing. And I had to write five novels and a couple of novelettes to get there. So working in a bookstore really opened my eyes to reader buying habits, publishing habits, how the marketplace worked, where the money went, how little authors make with a traditionally published book. All those things really influenced my decisions to self-publish and to try to publish two books a year and take a 10-year view of my publishing career.
Well, Hugh, on that idea that a writer has to keep writing, no matter how successful, you know, either way, you've got to keep putting out books. You know, I think one thing that interests me about NaNoWriMo is how it teaches some of the unsexy but truly vital things about being a writer, such as time management. And I know when you were on tour for one of your books, during one NaNoWriMo, actually, you said that you wrote on airplanes and in the back of taxis and on the sidewalk while waiting for your publicist to pick you up. So can you talk about your approach to writing and time management, whether you're writing a novel during NaNoWriMo or otherwise?
Yeah. So the last, I did five or six NaNoWriMos in a row successfully. The last two, I didn't hit 50,000 words. But the last book that I wrote during a month of November was Sand. And I was on book tour for Wool while I wrote it. So I was in Europe for almost the entire month of November. I think it was like I started the NaNoWriMo for 3 days and then had to get on a plane. And then I was on a 8-country book tour, and you know, your days are completely locked down by where you're spending a lot of time traveling, but you're also going to interviews and doing book signings and all these other things. And I had every excuse in the world not to write that month. Nobody could have blamed me for not doing it, but I don't know where you draw from the desire to like do this every day and see it through to the end, because for 20 years I wanted to write a book and couldn't do it. And the first book I wrote in a very short period. And then after that, I wrote a lot of my books during NaNoWriMo, where there's this kind of a whip cracking behind you every single day, you know, even though you're kind of the one doing it, or actually Grant, you and your team are the ones doing it. But you have to learn to do it yourself. And you have to just give yourself no excuses to take a day off and to fall behind. And when you're in that mindset, like, it doesn't matter what else is going on. I had full-time jobs. You know, had a house and a girlfriend and a dog that all needed my attention. I was, you know, doing a lot of the cooking and cleaning and breadwinning, and none of those were excuses not to write. And I really learned that sort of dedication and willpower through NaNoWriMo.
Thanks for mentioning that. I mean, I think so many people experience that same thing of wanting to write a book and not wanting to write a book. And you mentioned 20 years and then you did it. So there's this notion of overcoming an obstacle, which I'm hearing was maybe just life. But what was the biggest struggle, or what has been the biggest struggle you've had as a writer? And I mean, was it NaNoWriMo and just the discipline of getting into a writing habit that helped you to overcome it, or something else?
I think the biggest hurdle for me to move from being a reader to a writer is that I had never read a rough draft in my life. And I still have only read dozens of rough drafts of short stories, but maybe three rough drafts of novels only since I've been a writer. But for my whole life, I read finished, polished books that were the result of a dozen revisions, an editorial process, an agent being involved, a spouse or family members providing input. These were large group efforts with a big machine behind them that gave me these polished products. And that's all I had ever read. And every time since I was 12 years old, I would sit down to try to write a novel, I was reading, coming out of my fingertips, a rough draft for the first time in my life. And it did not compare. And even as I became a really decent writer and was like, you know, went to university and studied English and wrote papers that got A's and spent all this time editing and polishing to get these papers perfect, I never really appreciated that that's what the process would be for a book. And it wasn't until I started reading and reviewing and critiquing books for a website and going to book conferences and doing interviews with authors that I learned what their process was like, that these were regular people. They didn't have a stamp of approval from anywhere. They just were people who had a passion for it, decided to write, and they stuck with it long enough to make their drafts good enough. And I, through this process, completely dropped my desire to write a perfect draft on the first go around, which is what holds us up as writers, even after we become pros. Like, we expect our first drafts to not need any work. And that's another miracle of NaNoWriMo, is that you don't have time to have those thoughts. And once you learn that, that you're writing for the waste bin, that you're just getting clay on the potter's wheel, and you have to have all the clay in place before you can really put it into shape and make a boss out of it. So all those years, those 20 years of writing a couple of chapters and abandoning them because they weren't ready to be on a bookshelf, like, I just got over that. And that's one of the things I try to tell people when I do writing seminars or talk to young writers now who want to pursue this, is learn to write for the waste bin. And that means writing without a care. And shockingly, when you write for the waste bin, you tend to write the things that you want to frame and bronze, you know, these things that you never want to get rid of. It's just letting go of that fear that lets you power through that.
I love that phrase, learn to write for the waste bin. It reminds me of a Jane Smiley quote I recently read where she said, "A rough draft is perfect because it exists." And I thought that was a good way to view it.
I love that.
Yeah. You know, Hugh, I hosted my very first webcast, I think, with you way back in 2012 or 2013, which now seems like an ancient era for webcasting technology. And what I found interesting about that conversation, and it was about self-publishing, and we were just talking about things like how you do it, like how do you get a cover design, how do you market, how do you upload it to KDP, whatever it was. But every question, I kept noticing you mentioning the word self-confidence. And I thought about that after the webcast, how self-confidence is so crucial for every single stage of writing and every single stage of publishing. So I had this theory about you that self-confidence is really the key to your success. And so I'm wondering, one, is that true? Have you felt self-confidence, you know, leading you through this whole success story? And if you could talk a little bit more about the role self-confidence plays.
That's interesting. I think self-confidence would have gotten me in trouble. I think I would have like probably held out longer thinking I deserved a rock star agent with my first book, or that I should have been with a major publisher. I think the danger of self-confidence is that it can lead to vanity. And I've always thought of traditional publishing as more of the vanity press than self-publishing. There's a sense that you're willing to leave a lot of money on the table in order to have the accolades of your peers or the big presses. I'll get back to your question, but it just made me remember that when I was in negotiations with different publishing houses for Wool, I remember I was meeting with Random House, and they had, you know, a massive offer on the table for the book. It was in the seven figures, and I was turning it down because it was less than I was making on my own. And someone said, "But don't you want to say that you're published with Random House?" And that's when it really hit me that those decisions are the vanity decisions. And if you have too much self-confidence, I think it can get you in trouble with thinking that you deserve more right off the bat, or that you need validation from any place other than your reader. I think what maybe looked like self-confidence was the fact that I had very low ambitions. I really just wanted to write stories that I was proud of. And then I got a few readers, a few fans. One was like my cousin Lisa, my mom, teachers at the university that I was working in, who were taking the time to read anything that I published, an entire book, which is a huge ask for someone. It's a lot of time to put in. And I realized, wow, you know, I believed their praise. I believed that I was writing something great. And I knew my next book was going to be even better. And when I was writing for an audience of a dozen, and then 100, and then 1,000, it was a very, very simple process to ramp up and feel like, yeah, I'm doing a good job at this. No part of me ever thought, when I wrote something like, this is going to be the next Harry Potter, or someone needs to, you know, back a truck up and start shoveling money at me for what I'd created. Instead, I had very, very modest expectations for my writing career, my income, and by knowing what I expected of myself, and it was a little bit more than I was capable of at any stage along the way, I had the confidence that I could achieve it. But I don't think it was the kind of confidence that can get you in trouble, which can happen.
Well, Q, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today and for inspiring other NaNoWriMo participants. And to send our writers off with some wind in their sails this week, what's your favorite piece of writing advice?
Oh, I think, I love that quote about, a rough draft is perfect because it exists. My number one writing advice is to not stop until you get to the end. Just don't spend any time revising that first chapter. Don't worry if you've changed the gender or name or the point of view of your story. Change things on the fly and just keep going, and wait until you get to the end to even know what your story's about or what it needs. So, power forward, lay down sentences. I think that's the thing that got me through my first book and continues to drive my productivity today.
Great advice, Hugh. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
We'll be right back with today's book talk after this short break.
Brooke, I wanted to tell you about this little writing event that I'd like to tell people about because I think it might help them get inspired to do the heavy lifting on their writing projects. It's cool because it's produced hundreds of amazing books, including bestsellers, and thousands of people do it each year. And beyond realizing their creative dreams, many people just say it's a lot of fun. And it's free, which is cool.
It sounds like just the kind of event that many writers need, Grant. How can I find out more about it?
Well, you can go to NaNoWriMo.org. It's kind of a silly name, NaNoWriMo, which is an acronym for National Novel Writing Month, which happens every November. And the challenge is to write 50,000 words of a novel in a month. The idea is that a goal and a deadline is a creative midwife, and not to write your novel or memoir someday, but to do it today. Also, there's an amazing community of people who participate both online and in person. So it's like a rollicking party and a writing boot camp all in one.
And why the heck does it take place in November?
Because if you can write a novel during November, then you can write a novel anytime. Also, November is a dark and rainy month for many. So it's a good month to stay inside and write. And many people have leftover Halloween candy, which is known to fuel novel writing.
And you said memoirists can participate?
Yeah, a memoir is just a novel shelved in the nonfiction section by my definition. The main thing is to write, to banish your inner editor and focus on getting a first draft done because you can't edit a blank page.
That's amazing, Grant. I am going to sign up for this thing called NaNoWriMo.
It's not a newly discovered eel. It's not one of Jupiter's moons. It's not a mountain outside of Kathmandu. It's a novel writing event waiting for you at NaNoWriMo.org. Sign up now and start planning your novel. Welcome back, everybody, for today's book pick. And I wanted to say that one of the things I like about reading books on writing, I've been reading a lot of books on writing in order to get ready for NaNoWriMo. And one thing I like is how they shore up my self-confidence. I think it's just a matter of being in a type of conversation about writing and to read about others' struggles and breakthroughs and then to get wisdom from my favorite authors. So one way to get ready for NaNoWriMo is actually to simply read about writing. And I'm not even reading a book right now by a novelist at the moment, but I'm reading a collection of essays called Synthesizing Gravity by one of my favorite poets, Kay Ryan, who has actually lived in the Bay Area for a long time and very quietly taught community college before becoming the U.S. Poet Laureate about 10 years ago, and a pretty big poet you know, sometimes we don't hear of poets outside of the poetry world, but she's pretty big. And the thing I like about reading her essays is how uncompromising she is, you know, with her vision and thought. She just has a deep integrity and deep beliefs, and she's not writing for fame or fortune, but the purity of the story she's telling in her poems. And as a result, her poems and her essays are just so unique and so compelling. You just feel her integrity in every letter of every word. So by reading someone who writes with such self-confidence and integrity, I think it's likely to rub off on you. So I recommend this book, and I recommend you reading essays and books by your favorite authors on writing to gain self-confidence as well.
Thanks for that, Grant. And everybody, you know that Right Minded is a weekly podcast. And so we thank you so much for listening to it. For those of you who are regular listeners, thank you so much. I think you know, because we said a while ago that we have the goal of trying to reach 500 reviews. Well, we're not even close to there. So I am making an ask today for some more reviews for those of you who've been thinking about it and not doing it. Believe me, I get it, because I do that all the time. But I do want to share a recent review from Terry Sue Harms. Thank you, Terry, for this, because I love it. It says, "Right Minded, I came for the writing advice. I stayed for the mental health." So thank you for that. There's a longer review there, but I appreciate that. I mean, for me personally, and Grant too, I think this podcast also gives us mental health, because we need from, you know, the news, which I'm a little bit addicted to. And this is more fun and more interesting. So thank you, everybody. And we will see you next week.